Hi there, I'm Krish Saroy and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. Each week I show you how to live your purpose and discover your own sacred wild spirit. On the podcast we explore the nexus point where nature, consciousness, leadership and activism come together. I talk with thought leaders to get their insights and wisdom about our collective transformation. I also show you how to own your power, give your gifts and make your highest impact on this world. So with that, let's dive into this next episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. This is Krish Saroy, and this week I have a very special guest from my own part of the world, and that's Mr. Nigel Berman. Nigel, hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your podcast.
Awesome. Lovely to have you. And just by way of context, so I came across Nigel, I think, it must have been... It's several years ago now. Nigel runs an organization called the School of the Wild, based out of Brighton in the UK, my old stomping ground, as it were. And I've just always loved what Nigel is up to in the world. So, Nigel, rather than me telling the audience, give us a little bit of the skinny on what you're up to in the world and what you do.
Thank you. The company's called School of the Wild, and we bring leaders and teams outside into the wild to help them reconnect, to think differently and to work together better. So we're running programs based around a fire for different kinds of organizations and teams and leaders. Usually over a day. So we kind of, I've got a whole spiel about what it is, but that's probably enough.
we'll come to that. We first came across each other back when I was running the Brighton Centre of Spirituality, and it was that, you know, as I mentioned in our pre-conversation, it was that kind of space of spirituality, leadership and nature that, you know, always spoke to me about School of the Wild back then and now, as it were.
Yeah. So
what was it that... led you to set up School of the Wild in the first place, in its iteration as it was at the beginning?
It's a good question. I'm having to cast my mind back, but it's a whole long story, and I know we've got plenty of time. So,
absolutely, let's dive in.
So, I've done various things in my career. The thing before School of the Wild was an e-commerce business, actually called Nigel's Eco Store.
Love it.
Would you believe I paid someone to come up with that name? But I don't know how far back to go in this story, actually, because before that I was running another business. But basically, I ran Nigel's Eco Store for about 10 years. We sold kind of innovative energy saving gadgets and design led eco products. I started it around the beginning of the internet, before the internet was kind of huge. So in 2005, I think. And it grew really quickly. It just suddenly hit another zeitgeist. And I found some really interesting eco products. And I thought, I didn't know about these things. And I really want to know how to use the internet. So I just kind of made an e-commerce business and with about 10 products. And within a few days, we were selling stuff all over the place.
Love that.
And it just grew from there. And, you know, I really thought I was saving the planet through products. And I would, you know, I'd go on missions, trade missions to Europe, looking for the latest eco products. And, you know, we were featured in all the kind of national press. And, it was going really well until... the financial crash in kind of 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the conversation in the UK changed from the government saying they were trying to be the greenest government ever to it all being about the economy and, saving money, and business basically started to just go downhill. It was on an uphill curve till then, and then it went on a slow downhill curve, and it took about another 5 years for the decline to kind of become terminal. Everything was kind of declining, and I became very stressed. It was very stressful, and I had high blood pressure and wasn't sleeping very well. And in the kind of process of thinking about how do I fix this, someone suggested about the idea about selling experiences rather than, as well as products. And so I came across some people who were doing kind of nature connection work. And I did some workshops in the woods. And around the same time, I also did a program at Embercombe called The Journey. And I was introduced to people like David Abrams and his book. I don't know if you've read it, The Spell of the Sensuous, which... I don't know anybody who's actually managed to read it, but it's like, because it's
It is really, really, I've never managed to get through it, but it is amazing. It is an amazing book.
And they, people were just saying all sorts of stuff that just really resonated, you know, that the nature is a community that we belong to, that it's more than just recreation. And I think there was something. Why it resonated strongly with me is because I was involved in a meetup group in Brighton that was about people meeting up and going and doing walks or bike rides in nature. And I'd been on a bike ride from Chichester to Bognor Regis with this group. And it was a beautiful sunny day. And part of the bike ride went through Pagan Marshes, which but it's beautiful. I think it was low tide and the sun was out and the sun was reflecting on the kind of these pools. And there's like earth banks that you can kind of, the path goes across and you can cycle along it.
Okay.
But the guy that was leading it, his objective was just to get through this as quickly as possible. You know, it was And I was like, this is beautiful. I want to experience this and soak it up and feel what it's like to be here. And it made me realize that, you know, being in nature is not just about recreation, and that's important for me.
Yeah.
And spending time and not just treating it as somewhere to go for a run or, you know, a bike ride.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and then sort of a whole load of things started to coalesce, and I met some people who were offering different kinds of nature connection things. And I met someone who I actually started dating, who's a eco artist, and she was running things in the woods where, like, teaching people how to make pottery from river clay.
Love and, that. You
know, baskets from wild plants. And, you know, I'd be sitting around a fire doing these crazy things, like in learning how to make fire without matches, which, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff existed.
Absolutely.
I've been selling gadgets and products through e-commerce. And before that, I was running a magazine. So it was all about technology and using software and being in front of computers for long hours. And this was like a revelation. And it felt like coming home. And it, you know, it was a complete antidote to being at a desk, you know, in front of a screen and all the kind of stress that I'd felt from the business started to get better, and I just felt happier. And I thought, and so all these things were kind of floating around in my head, and and I thought, I want to learn more about all of these kind of things, you know, and I've just done this course with Embercombe, and it felt really significant. So I started to bring teachers in, and I set up a meetup group, and we started to schedule different kinds of activities, some bushcraft things. We were experimenting. You know, we tried more woo-woo, more spiritual things. We tried more practical things. And it just kind of took off. I mean, you know, within the first week, I think we had 100 members. And it just grew to thousands. You know, we were scheduling classes on a Sunday morning where we would teach people fire making, foraging, nature connection things, night walks, whittling. And basically, it was a way for me to get to play with all these things and to bring in great teachers and to learn from them and and be in the woods and love be around that. Fires. And, you know, it was brilliant.
Yeah, love that. Love that. And what I really liked about what you were programming and all that was, you know, there's, you know, there is bushcraft stuff out there. There is stuff on, you know, where I come from on Druidry and Earthbased. But you were, as you say, you were bringing lots of aspects. Nature was the central part of it as opposed to bushcraft, or, you know, it was very eclectic. And that's what really attracted me in the first place.
I think I was curating different things that I wanted to learn about, you know, and it wasn't, you know, we did fire making. We occasionally did bow drill, like bushcraft, like how to make fire from rubbing two sticks together, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't really what I was after. You know, it was more about synthesizing some different aspects of my life. And I think that's something that I've always done. You know, when I ran a magazine, it was a bit spiritual, a bit about eating out and what's on at the cinema and a kind of contemporary modern life that has an element of spirituality to it, but that's not what it's all about. And I think the same with School of the Wild is it was about that kind of understanding. So somewhere in the middle, like having a leg in different camps.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And what, you know, as we kind of said earlier, it's like you can't move in the media or on social media or, you know, for nature now. It's like it's everywhere, which can only be a good thing. But, you know, I remember you doing this back in, I don't know, 2013, 2014, maybe even a bit earlier. I came on a medicine walk, and it was with Rebecca Card, who's been on this podcast.
Yeah.
You were the only one locally, certainly, doing anything like that at the time, which was pretty amazing.
I mean, medicine walks continue to blow my mind. You know, they're amazing. And, you know, I'm trying to work out a way of how to do those with leaders and with teams. And I think we're going to start. I mean, I did some 2 years ago where I got a bunch of leaders together and we did. I didn't really tell them. I think that's the thing. It's like I'm not saying come and do a medicine walk. I was inviting people to be around a campfire and to do some leadership work. And then I would get them to do a medicine walk. And, you know, it's really interesting. It's so powerful. I think it's all about the framing.
Right. Right. So let's talk about that then. Because obviously over the several years, School of the Wild is, I don't know whether we call it shifted focus or focused in, or, but you now have much more of a focus, as you said earlier, around leadership, teams, you know, that kind of business side. What, you know, before we actually get, what was it that caused the shift for you?
So there's a couple of things. One is that some businesses got in touch with us and asked us if we could organize something for them. Particularly what I discovered through doing the meetup group is that foraging sells. Everybody wants to learn foraging.
Especially around Brighton and Hove, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if we were the first people doing it, but we definitely kind of publicized it. And I think also we kind of were very good on our SEO for foraging. So
brilliant. Love it.
People were Googling foraging in Brighton. We came up top, I think. Which is how businesses found us, because they wanted to do kind of a foraging day with their team. And, you know, it wasn't really a business. It was like a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was doing these sessions on a Sunday morning with teachers. And it wasn't really making any money. I was just about, sometimes, you know, I would just be able to cover the teacher and, sometimes we'd split whatever it was 50-50, but I was trying to figure out a way how to make it a business. And and I wanted to make it more interesting for myself. I wasn't leading anything. I was only bringing in teachers.
Yeah.
And I was always the helper. I always wanted to be there because I'm quite a hands-on kind of person. And you know, part of the reason for me doing it is that I wanted to be doing this stuff, you know, to be in the woods and not to be just organizing it for somebody else to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So for all of those reasons, you know, I have had over the years, a kind of coachy type consultant guy called Matt Weston, who is an absolute genius and is somebody who helped me in my previous business. Really creative guy. And I had a session with him and he said, I think you should drop the public classes and just work with businesses. If you want to turn this into a business, then that's where the business is. And it took me a kind of a long time to do that. There was a while when we were doing both at the same time, but it kind of didn't really work because I don't think people knew what we were. And then we were doing stuff at the weekends and then like the pricing and, you know, it didn't really work. And so 2 years ago, I think, I just decided to drop the classes for the public on Sunday morning. Well, actually, it's not entirely true. I decided if we're going to do it, then we're only going to do things that are edgy and interesting. So, yes. So we did blindfold foraging.
Oh, my God, really? Amazing.
One of the best things we've ever done. I mean, basically, we've been trying to do foraging based around the idea of, like, this is about tuning into your senses, not about learning from a book. It's not about necessarily knowing the name of something. It's about the only way to really know a plant is through your senses, is how, you know, is to smell it, to taste it, to touch it. I mean, tasting things at the end, really, because you need to be really safe and sure that it's...
Of course.
I think it is. But if you remove sight, and you then it forces you to use your other senses, and it's just really, it was just brilliant. It was really brilliant. And we kind of led people, so we did it in a really safe way, and we led people really slowly to kind of different plants, and we got them to smell it and to feel it and to taste it before they looked at it.
Awesome. Love that.
And then we've been doing some night walks. And I thought, which I love as well, it's another one of my favorite things. There's something about being on the land at night. There's a bit of a theme here where it kind of, you can't see as much.
Yeah.
And you tune into your other senses and you get a feeling for the land and you know, because there's not the buzz of the daytime, the land is kind of much quieter and it can be really magical.
Yeah.
When you're doing these night walks. And I thought, right, let's do an all-night walk. So those were the kind of two things.
Brilliant.
That we continued to do while we were sort of in the middle of dropping our kind of workshop for individuals.
Yeah.
And then recently we basically stopped doing that altogether and we're just working with organizations and leaders.
Yeah, amazing. I just want to pick up on something just before we go into that of something I really hear there, and it's something that comes out a lot on this podcast, but it's that we just put out an episode today with a lady called Laura Adrian from Minneapolis, and we're talking about mindfulness, and actually it's like actually that thing with nature and kind of really kind of going into the body, embodiment, it's almost mindlessness, as it were. And I think what I hear of what you're saying is, for me, like, sight is always the most heady of the senses. And when you take that away, you have to drop into that felt sense, which is a different relationship. We're not used to doing that, are we, as human beings these days?
Yeah, but I think it's natural. I mean,
of course it is.
I want a better word. I'm really interested in Buddhist meditation. I mean, that's my main practice at the moment.
Mm.
And the practice I'm doing is noticing. Well, it's beyond mindfulness, actually. It's about mind and seeing where mind is, but also seeing space or feeling space. I don't know. I'm exploring this at the moment and I'm at the beginning of a journey. So but it's very interesting.
I love
the idea of, you know, that we have a kind of cognitive mind and a non-cognitive mind.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, let's face it, you know, the science is saying that, you know, there's neurological matter in the heart and the gut these days. We know about serotonin being produced. So it's not just, that's the thing for me, I think, you know, the word mind is synonymous with head. And what I hear, you're right, it's really natural, but in the human construct of a world, it seems like we live very strongly in a heady, you know, one mode of being, as it were, which is not a natural way of being.
Or maybe we think, you know, we think we do, but actually there's all sorts of other stuff going on that we just kind of maybe don't acknowledge. But, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Your feelings and your senses trigger before you think something. I mean, or they influence it. I've been listening to all sorts of different things. I don't know if you know the book, The Secret Teachings of Plants.
I do. I haven't read it, but it's on my list. It's actually on the bookshelf over there.
So I recently discovered audiobooks because I'm a big one for buying loads of books and then putting them on the side and never reading them. And I tried to read Secret Teachings of Plants and got stuck. So now I'm listening to it as an audiobook, and I'm also getting stuck on that, actually. It's quite, because it's very dense as well.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that link up. So what he talks about is about sensing with your heart, which is kind of related to the meditation thing that I'm doing. And also I was watching something about from the Heart Math Institute, where they talk about that, you know, the heart has a field that's about, extends about 4 feet or more in front of us, and our heads extends about 6 inches or something. So that, you know, we sense way more with our hearts than we do with our heads.
Yeah, it's like the feels like, what is it, 5,000% bigger or something like that. Yeah, amazing. So, I mean, bringing that fully up to date, which is, I work a lot of my day work is with leaders and with leadership teams and that kind of stuff. And I love kind of that you've brought leadership into this realm, as it were. So, what are you finding, given that nature is such a big thing right now, what are you finding is the receptivity of business, and how leaders are responding to the work that you're doing?
I think it's definitely changed. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was a struggle, you know, partly for people to bring their teams out or to think they can, because you have to go somewhere else to do it. You know, you can't do it from your office. You can't hire a meeting room and go and do it there. You've got to go somewhere else. You've got to, you know, to give up or allocate a few hours. You've got to get out of town somewhere. And, you know, it was an absolute struggle to persuade people to come and do it. Now, it's kind of a bit ridiculous that, you know, we're making these pitches to companies and, you know, we're expecting 20 or 30% of them to say yes. They're all saying yes. I think they're starting to get it. And I think we've got a stronger story, and I understand what we're doing now. It's taken me a while to get there. Partly about team. It's more about team and leadership development and doing that in nature than kind of persuading or I'm not quite sure exactly how to say this, but, we're not doing really nature connection overtly with teams and with leaders. We're using nature as a container and for the process. Yeah. So we're running processes really with more with teams at the moment, you know, but I've always felt that the conversation is the important thing, and that we're using nature to create a space for meaningful conversations that change the way people work and then change the way that people live. And, you know, it's, for me, it's about impact. You know, we've developed a process that includes some activities, that includes facilitated conversation. But the idea is that the group leaves with actions, that they're actually going to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there are, you know, lots of organizations out there, and, you know, through the last kind of 18 months or so, having said I was going to steer away from like the pandemic and all that kind of thing, obviously that's a massive part of what's going on right now. But so there are lots of organizations that kind of do team development, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But what are you finding is the impact of using nature as a container for that kind of work?
I mean, all the things that they say in the kind of research that I think there's been an explosion of research about the benefits of being in nature, but you can see it happening, you know, that it's a great leveler, that people can be themselves and can relate to each other as human beings rather than their job role. That boosts creative thinking, that it reduces distracted thinking, that it helps you think longer term rather than short term, that it helps you feel like you're part of something. I mean, it's an immersion. You know, when you're out in the woods, you can't really separate yourself from that. You're in it. You're part of it. So, you know, what people experience is they feel more connected to each other and they feel more positive and they get to know each other better as people, and they're building trust, and they get the benefits of feeling both energized and refreshed and calm and, you know, and relaxed. And that feeling lasts. So I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I am often crying on our days because of what people say, you know, at the end, because it's really emotional, you know, and it's really, we don't really have to say this stuff to people. It's like they all say it back to us at the end about how they feel more connected with each other and all those things I just said.
So I can imagine, I mean, look, you know, the fact that you're able to get kind of certain companies out into nature in the first place will, you know, that will separate them out from those organizations that just wouldn't do that. But I'm sure that you do see the full gamut of people in a group of those that are really lent in versus those that are a bit cynical as they come in or whatever else. That's an assumption on my part, as it were. Is that how it happens? And what do you see actually shifting people, you know, in an experiential sense?
People don't tend to be cynical. I mean, pretty much everybody who's come,
love that,
is happy to be there. I think, you know, what's interesting is that mostly the leaders and the leadership are asking their teams, do they want to do this? Whether they bring everybody on board, then they don't just say, we're doing this and you're coming. So mostly they've asked them if they'd like to. And mostly, I don't think we've ever had anybody who was cynical about it. I mean, we have people who are a little bit nervous.
Of course.
But maybe for other reasons. Does that answer your question? I can't.
Yeah.
I don't think we've really had anybody who's really that resistant or reluctant. Not that I can remember.
What kind of nervousness do you tend to notice people have? Because I can imagine we're so, I mean, I forget what the stats are, but if you take kind of, you know, China, for example, you know, the rate of urbanization there is massive. And I think, you know, the stats are something like 60% of the world population is going to be in an urban environment by 2030 or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So that's the assumption I make around nervousness and that kind of thing. But what do you see?
I mean, it can be a mix of just people who are just generally nervous in life anyway. And so being out of their comfort zone, brings that up.
Mm-hmm.
To people who, I mean, I guess there are people who just don't spend any time in nature. It's kind of getting rarer from the people that come to our days, but you know, there have been people who just don't spend any time in nature and they're not sure what to expect or, you know, what we're going to do with them. But I've not noticed. I mean, to be honest, you know, because of the pandemic, we haven't done it for a year. We are only just starting to. We're just opening up again. It's only just been allowed from April.
Yeah, absolutely.
So trying to remember back like a couple of years ago, I can't quite remember. There's nothing that particularly has stood out from people who are nervous. You know, somebody came along to something we did recently and they were quite nervous, but I think that was just personal, kind of a result of, you know, partly there's a little bit of nervousness about people kind of emerging from lockdown and being around people again. But it's not many.
Interesting. Really, really interesting. I mean, I do think there's been quite a major shift as well, right? From the, the pandemic and, just, I think it's been building for some time, the notion of our, somewhat reconnection with nature, as it were. But I'm sure there are lots of people out there listening who have probably done, some kind of team development intervention in a building, in a conference room, that kind of, So hearing words like team development, all that might have certain connotation. What might a typical day in the woods doing teamwork with you look like, or what would they notice that's different?
Can I just say that, as you said that, I remember at the end of one day, probably a while ago, where we were working with campaigns team from a large charity. And at the end, one of the, we go around at the end and we ask people to say what they got out of the day. And one guy said, when I heard that we were doing a kind of corporate team building thing, I really thought it was going to be crap, but it was brilliant.
Love that. Brilliant. Yay.
Yeah, totally love that. So what does it mean? Like I said, it's based around a campfire.
Mm-hmm.
We have a sort of an arc to the day, which is connection, reflection, and emergence.
Mm.
So we do, and the morning is all about connection and a little bit of reflection. So we do, some fun icebreakery things. And then we'll teach people activities, which could be a bushcraft thing. It could be how to make fires without matches. It could be building a shelter. Mm. It could be whittling. It could be foraging. Something where they can learn something new and have an experience and relax and be together doing something.
Mm-hmm. Very smart.
We try and design them so that they reflect that organization's situation. So if they're in different offices, we might build in something around different groups doing things where they've got to talk to each other differently. And we try and do it in such a way that there is a learning to be had from it that you can take back into your work.
Mm.
So it's more than just the activity. It's a learning process as well. Mm. Then we do lunch. And then in the afternoon, we host and facilitate a conversation around the question and the theme that they've brought, which could be about how they work together. It could be about well-being. It could be about purpose. It could be legacy. It could be around sustainability or values. So it's about what they bring and their issue that they'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
And, and then we're doing it as like involving everybody in a, meaningful participation in a conversation where that leads to that they decide on doing something together, some actions that they're going to take away and implement.
Amazing. Amazing. And I can imagine I've run a lot of these things in buildings.
Yeah.
And I'm just in myself, just imagining being in the woods with the connection I have with wood or, a piece of nature and that kind of thing. And just the difference I can imagine it's huge, as it were.
Totally. I mean, doing the stuff around a fire is kind of primal. It's how, how we were together for thousands of years. We were telling stories around fires. We were kind of telling conversation around fires, deciding things together around fires. It's kind of in our blood.
Mm. Yeah.
In our genes.
Well, and there's that link back, right, to what we were saying earlier about, the taking away the visibility thing. It's almost like a link back to something deeper.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because organizations are effectively an organism or that kind of thing, in the same way, a forest is or whatever else. What do you think organizations have to learn from nature, as it were?
That's a really good question.
A really big question as well. I appreciate that.
Question. A lot, I think I would say, is the answer to that. I mean, all the things that we're grappling with. I think The reason why I got into this is because I've always been on a kind of an ecological environmental mission. And, you know, I felt that, you know, the whole disconnect that we have from nature, because we live in cities, because we work in offices, because we're using technology, that, you know, from the Industrial Revolution, there's been like a slow disconnection from nature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 90% of us live, not 90%, I think it's more than 80% of us in the UK live in cities, towns and cities. Mm-hmm. And we spend something like 90% of our time indoors. And we've kind of forgotten that we're part of nature, that we are nature, that, mm-hmm. you know, that we've sort of forgotten that we're animals and that we kind of think we're something else.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we're going to fix the problems that we clearly have, climate change, you know, the ecological crisis, that we have to reconnect with nature and find a different way of doing things and reconnect to our hearts. And
yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, I'm not sure the technological solutions, which is where things seem to be heading, are going to fix it. I think it's Joanna Macy that talks about, it's all about changing consciousness and, to paraphrase or to rephrase Einstein, we're not going to fix problems in the same way that, you know, the same place that we created them.
100%, 100%. You are a man after my own heart in that. But, you know, it's interesting because in the holistic activism piece that I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, we are talking to some like very large organizations that are, you know, have committed to kind of net zero carbon, net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And they are, you know, as you talk to them, they are in that place of, you know, how do we monitor, how do we create organizational change and this kind of thing. Yeah. But it's a very, I keep on using the word heady, but it's a very analytical, rational, you know, neocortex kind of approach. I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, it's a hypothetical, I guess, but if an organization was looking at that kind of thing, you know, and it's a great thing that some organizations are looking at that and going, you know, we've got to do that. That's clearly a good thing. But what kind of difference do you think it would be if they came out and did some work with you in the woods or in a field or something? And what impact do you think that would have?
Well, you know, I think, like you just said, I mean, it's about more than a head connection. It's about an emotional connection. It's about, you know, making it heartfelt and feeling the connection with each other and with nature, I think would lead people to different solutions and different decisions. Mm. And if you just try and do it in a room, I mean, or in your office, I read someone else's website and they said something like, a desk is a dangerous place to view the world. you know, if you're making decisions about the world, surely you need to be out there in it to kind of know what's going on and what it feels like and to learn from it and to feel part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not agree with you more. I could not agree with you more. And and like you say, it's a lot of these organizations are making decisions about something that seems to be out there or other than or separate than, rather than we are part of it and we can learn from it, even if it's a more than human perspective.
Yes, I think we've forgotten that there is a more than human world. It's not all about us.
no, absolutely, it really isn't. And I think there's the biggest piece of like ego bravado ever, right? It's clearly all about us. But it's so not. And, you know, I think in my investigation with this podcast, I always come back to a phrase that I think I first saw Don Miguel Ruiz use in The Four Agreements, which was, you know, not a new concept, but the domestication of the human spirit. And, you know, so that for me is that notion of what is our sacred wild nature.
Yeah.
And that's got to be connected to the wild somehow, which is why I love the School of the Wild, as it were.
I mean, I'm still working this out. You know, what does that mean? What does it mean to be connected to your own wildness?
Mm.
All I can say is how it affects me when I do that. You know, when I'm out in the woods, when I'm doing something wild.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever come across, there's a great writer called Martin Shaw, who's based in Oxford, wrote Courting the Wild Twin. And
but I followed, do you know, I was a bit of a Martin Shaw groupie because I've seen him tell stories and he's a brilliant storyteller.
Oh God. Yeah, really.
But I don't know that story.
So Courting the Wild Twin, it's a book. It's based in a notion. I'm going to do a horrible paraphrasing here, but the notion of that as human beings, we're actually born as twins. We have the civilized twin and the wild twin. Mm-hmm. And that our parents chuck the wild twin out the window and off they go running in the wild. But we're still always connected with them. But they run amok and all that out in their wildness. And we live these very civilized lives and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I guess in modern psychology, it's like modern psychology, but we might call that shadow work, as it were. But it's almost like we've placed our own wildness into shadow, to use the Jungian terms, and lost a big piece of ourselves along the way, as it were.
You know, I had a really, really interesting experience on the last team day that we did, that something happened, and this is something that's been happening to me over the last few years, is that sometimes, often, when I say something that's meaningful for me, I get quite emotional. And as I was saying to you, that this often happens at the end of a team day, but on the last team day, it happened right at the very start. It was like within, like from the get-go, like I'm just saying my opening introduction, and I'm starting to choke up. Which I don't really know where that was coming from, but I do find that quite uncomfortable, especially when, you know, working with a large group and suddenly start getting a bit teary.
Love that.
This time, I think there's partly something that I'm learning about facilitation is that, as my mentor keeps telling me, you have to stand in solidarity with the group. And that means taking the same risk and being as authentic and honest as you hope that they will be. And so I just decided that I'm not going to try and hide this, which is what I might have otherwise tried to do. And, you know, it was fine. And I mentioned it, and it felt good to do that. And I finished my bit, and later on, a guy came up to me and said, "You know, how do you do that? I find it really difficult to show my emotions. You know, is there any advice you can give me?" And I just thought how important it is for men, particularly young men, to get in touch with their vulnerability and to feel that as a strength, rather than as a weakness.
Oh, God, talk about taking my breath away. Yes, 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 yes. 100%.
You know, and that hadn't happened to me before. And it felt really important. And I got a little inkling about some future work, working with men particularly, and maybe, I don't know, or young men. We'll see.
Well, it's funny because my next question, kind of beginning to kind of draw us towards a closing, as it were, was going to be. So where do you see things kind of going next, both for the School of the Wild and for yourself, as it were?
I mean, I would really like to, I'm working on a longer program. You know, we'd really like to take a team or a group of leaders on more of a journey. Our days have tended to be one-off programs, maybe over a day or even just an afternoon. But I'd like to do something that where we can go on a journey with a group. So I'm working on that. So that is in development. It's kind of, School of the Wild has been a bit of a side project, and I guess I'm hoping that it's going to become more of a full-time thing. Personally, I mean, it's about getting more experience at facilitation and getting better at that and knowing more about working with groups and bringing more things in, like medicine walks, where we can kind of push the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah. I love that. Well, if there's one word that I think sort of has become very apparent in this conversation to me, even if we haven't said it a lot, it is emergent. And one of the, I think, you know, coming back to one of the strengths I see in you and what you're doing, and it comes back to that vulnerability piece, is, you know, business traditionally is not very comfortable with emergent reality. We need to be in control. We need to have certainty. We need to have, you know, outcomes and all that kind of thing. And, you know, I think this emergent journey you've been on, you know, has been, you were ahead of your time back then. I think you're sort of ahead of your time now. And my prediction will be careful what you ask for, because I think in the next couple of years, I think things are going to go absolutely bonkers for you, as it were.
It feels a bit bonkers at the moment, actually. I think I love emergence, and I love the idea of it. And I think it's, emergence is a property of the wild, because you bring things together and you've no idea what's going to happen as a result. And so I think that really fits. So thank you for that.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, in business, we have this very, you know, I don't know, it's not a contrived word at all, but, you know, it's a very safe word. I think we call it innovation, you know, and actually that's just emergent reality, isn't it, in a certain kind of way. Fascinating. If people want to find out about the work that you're doing and they want to kind of do something maybe with their company or their team, where can they find you, find out about what you're up to and what you offer?
The best place is probably our website, which is schoolofthewild.com.
Brilliant stuff. And do you imagine that, because obviously I know you're Brighton and Sussex based at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you imagine that the emergence might take you into a wider playing field, as it were?
I mean, it kind of is starting to happen. We're getting clients in London who want to do it in London. So I've been looking for places to do this work in London, which is tricky, but I found a few places. So hopefully later this summer and autumn, we're going to be doing some work in London. I don't know beyond that. I mean, it's a whole other story about how we run the days, and because we don't actually have our own venue. So we use different venues, which means that we're always bringing kit in, and there's a lot of kit. And it, you know, it is a logistical thing. So I'm trying to think about how we could reduce the load of that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Nigel, if there was, given this journey you've been on, and what I really love is that I think part of your vulnerability and emergent is that I get this feeling of a certain level of comfort with ambiguity, as it were, and, you know, and being with the question, as it were. If there was a piece of wisdom that you could give business leaders from your journey, from your connection with nature and the effect you see nature has on business, what wisdom would you give?
I was dreading this question. I knew you were going to ask me. I don't know. I think the important thing is to get outside and maybe go for walks on your own. In the woods. I think that's my top tip and bit of wisdom. There's, you know, it's a place where you don't feel alone, where you can feel connected, where you might get some of your best ideas, where you might learn something new. To spend some time in nature without an agenda. That's my wisdom.
There's the important bit for me, or the super important bit, without an agenda. Awesome. Nigel, thank you so much for being a guest. It's this has been everything I hoped it would be, and more so. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, likewise, it's been a real pleasure chatting to you, Krish.
Awesome. So there you go, everyone. My name is Krish Saroy. I'm the host of The Sacred Wild. Our guest this afternoon was Nigel Berman of the School of the Wild, and we'll see you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now.
thank you so much for joining me on the Sacred Wire podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and got something meaningful out of it. And if you did, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Those reviews really help us out and they're what keep us here. Also, please make sure to hit subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and loved ones. And with that, many blessings, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now.